In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody, and happy October 8th. We are live on 1430 ESPN. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, and I am your host, Paul Metters. Every Saturday, 10 to 12, break down all the cool high school action from this week. There were a few Thursday games, and obviously last night was fully loaded. We're going to be breaking down those games for the first hour. Love talking high school football. Central Valley football is just amazing. We have a lot of one-town schools that we love and appreciate. We're going to be talking with a couple guys, with the coach from Dinuba High, C.J. Lester, bringing in our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week, Christian Bobenreith. They'll be on the show a little after 10:30. After this break, we'll be talking with Gabe Camarillo, like I mentioned, breaking down all these scores. And at the 11 o'clock hour, for a full hour, I'm bringing in a special guest. This is a name that resonates throughout the Central Valley. Everybody knows this guy, right? If you speak his name, everybody's got a story about this kid. Well, he's not a kid anymore, but his name's Efren Gazar. I say kid because I feel like we've known Efren for a long time. Through his days of playing football at Kerman, being a standout, from walking on to Fresno State. It's an incredible story about how he walked on to Fresno State. He was as low as it gets on the depth chart, made the team. Not only did he make the team, but he replaced an injured Corey Hall at safety and had six interceptions as a walk-on, earned a scholarship, played his senior year, got his degree, got into coaching, an absolute legend in Kerman and in Fresno State football lore. About a year ago, he's diagnosed with ALS. Just a massive blow to the community and obviously to him and his family. So he's fought hard all his life for everything that he's succeeded in, and now he's in the biggest fight of his life. We're going to be talking with Efren a little after 11 o'clock for the whole hour, talking about his high school career, his college career, walking on, how Pat Hill gave him a shot, earning all WAC honors, and the life that he's led after that. So really looking forward to that conversation with Efren Gazar. Make sure you guys tune in at hour number two as well. So you can follow me on Twitter at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors, or at 1430 ESPN for a lot of the high school rundowns. And speaking of rundowns, I'm just going to go down the list of the scores from last night. 1430 ESPN, we broadcasted the incredible Clovis West and Clovis East football games. Jose Gonzalez and I from the Jose Gonzalez Show, we had a great game. And it was actually, I guess we could call it a flex game because it initially wasn't on the schedule. So we left a lot of our high school games, the ones that we were going to broadcast, open just in case something like last night's matchup happened. So we decided, we got to broadcast that game. Well, for a few reasons. Well, first of all, Clovis West was 6-0 going into that game. Clovis East was 6-0. Two great stories. Clovis West shot up to number one on all the rankings from all the pundits, from Cal Preps, which is where the playoff rankings come from, Cal Preps. So Clovis West was number one. Just an incredible turnaround. They were 4-8 last year. In Coach Eric Brown's first season. Before that, they were like 11-27. Just an awful stretch. But Coach Brown has turned that program around. And Clovis East, on the flip side, we know about their history. They had an 0-35 streak in the league. Just awful. The mid-2000s, they were the beasts from the East, winning Central Section championships, having Division I players. They were a tough, tough football program. They fell on hard times. But both teams were trending up. Both teams were 6-0 going into last night's game. Obviously, I felt Clovis West had the advantage. The game was at La Monica Stadium. They have a high-flying offense. Clovis East has a sophomore quarterback that is excellent. Ty Miller is his name. Ryan Markarian is a quarterback for Clovis West. They have a trio of really good receivers, including Marshall Sanders, who has multiple Division I offers. And the game was as advertised. So Clovis East was up 20-7. Clovis West got a touchdown late in the in the second quarter, about a minute and a half left in the half. And then from then on, it was all Clovis West. However, Clovis East actually brought it to a 36-30 football game with under 2 minutes left. And, of course, they tried an onside kick. They only had one timeout left. Tried an onside kick, and Clovis East recovered the onside kick. And come to find out, there was a penalty. We're like, what was the penalty? It was an illegal kick. Now, what is an illegal kick? Well, when you kick off in high school, the ball has to bounce twice before it could shoot up in the air. It's a safety reason. So what the referee deemed was that the ball popped up too high off of the initial bounce. And even though it hit off a Clovis West player and Clovis East recovered it, it was still an illegal kick. So they had to do it over. And actually, Clovis West ended up getting a late touchdown, so they won 42-30. But what a great game last night. We talk a little bit more with Gabe Camarillo because he was at that game. But before then, I want to run down a few more of the important scores up and down the central section from last night. So San Joaquin Memorial beat Madera 56-0. We figured that would be one of those blowout games. And next week, San Joaquin Memorial takes on their toughest game in the CMAC. They're going to be playing Bullard, a game that we're going to be covering here on 1430 ESPN. Sanger, look at the Apaches, now two in a row, beat Edison 28-27 in a really good ball game. In East Sequoia action, Lindsay beat Farmersville 36-14. Arosi beat Granite Hills 48-6, and Strathmore beat Woodlake 28-6. East Yosemite action, Golden West beat Mount Whitney 18-13. Menachi beat El Diamante 26-7, and Redwood. Be careful of Redwood, man. They most likely, if they run the table, they're going to be a Division I team. They're based Division II, but Redwood was beat a previously unbeaten Porterville 28-0. That's going to be a tough game for anybody in the playoffs. In the Mountain Region, a game that a little bit of a surprise, but Mission Prep destroyed Lompoc 61-35. Lompoc started off hot. Strength of schedule was in question. So, yeah, Mission Prep hangs 61 on them. In North Yosemite action, Madera South beat Roosevelt 26-17. McLean beat Sanger West 36-28. And Sunnyside beat Fresno High 59-12. And Matilda Torres, they keep winning 27-22 over Hoover. In Northwest Sequoia action, Carruthers beat Parlier 63-0. Fowler beat Chowchilla 35-7. Liberty Madera, they keep winning as well. They blasted Minarets 55-0. And Yosemite, you know, Yosemite had a lot of issues a few weeks ago. Had to stop their game in the second half because they ran out of players, lots of injuries. Well, they beat Riverdale 52-47. Frontier beat Garces 29-28. Poor Garces, they're 1-6. And they're still ranked, I believe, in the top 16 at Cal Preps. But you have to have a 30% winning percentage to make the playoffs. And they still got to play Liberty. So I don't even know if Garces is going to make the playoffs. Wow. Who could imagine that at the beginning of the year? Bakersfield beat Independence 28-25. And Bakersfield Christian, who's on a nice little roll, beat Ridgeview 38-7. And something interesting about that Bakersfield Christian game, I think you guys know that Darren Carr is their head coach. And that's obviously Derek and David's brother. There was a picture that was posted on social media of David, because he is overseas, he's in London, I believe, calling games at like 5:30 in the morning their time, right? From an iPad. So that was pretty darn awesome. So yes, David Carr was calling plays for Bakersfield Christian while overseas from an iPad. So how cool is that? In Tri-River Athletic Conference action, Buchanan beat Central 49-41. Central was up, Buchanan was up big in that game. Michael Reynolds, the running back, the senior, had another great game. Four touchdowns on the ground, one through the air. That kid, he's a difference maker. And with Jaden Mandels, their quarterback, you know, they had that loss last week to Clovis West in that incredible game where Clovis West scored a touchdown with a 40-yard touchdown pass to Marshall Sanders from Markarian. But, Buchanan is, you know, they got to be one of the favorites, one of the top two or three favorites to win a Central Section D1 title. Clovis North beat Clovis 38-35. Well, the Cougars actually came back. Clovis North was up big. Clovis North, look out. You know, they had that tough game last week against Clovis East where they lost and under a minute left as well. So Clovis North's got a really tough team. And then we talked about the Clovis West and Clovis East game. A few more scores for you. West Sierra action. Dos Palos beat Mendota 44-41. Fireball beat Tranquility 44-21. And Dinuba, we're going to be talking with Christian Bobenreth and C.J. Lester. They were all over Tulare Weston 49-7. Lemoore beat Mission Oak 48-0. So that sets up next week's game between Dinuba and Lemoore. In Bakersfield, Centennial beat Highland 21-7. And Washington Union beat Exeter 49-7. And I think we might be able to talk to Gabe Camarillo about this because I believe he was there for a little bit last night. But in eight-man football, Fresno Christian in a big game beat Sierra 56-27. And eight-man football is a lot of fun. First of all, a lot of fun to coach. I coach eight-man flag football, and that is a lot of fun. You could be very, very creative in your play calling, and there's a lot of action, obviously a lot of scoring as well. It's a smaller field, but you only usually have three linemen, so there's not a lot of sacks. So big open field, even though it's smaller, there's only eight guys on the field. So congrats to Fresno Christian for winning that game. All right, we're going to be breaking down these games a little bit more in depth. I kind of went in depth a little bit between the Clovis West and Clovis East game, but Gabe and I are going to be breaking it down. I think he was on the field for that onside kick that was all for naught for Clovis East. So we're going to be talking about that and more coming up on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Back to the Central Valley Sports Report. You found us on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters. And I think, obviously, that song got way more popular with the more cowbell Saturday Night Live skit with Will Ferrell. I mean, just an instant classic with Christopher Walken as well. And, yeah, like that song definitely gained way more life after the Saturday Night Live episode than it did as a song. It's an okay song. It's not a great song, but definitely got a lot more legs after that skit. All right, we did a decent job breaking down that Clovis West and Clovis East football game. It had tons of action, and there was a lot of controversy towards the end because when you're calling high school games, we don't have the luxury of having instant replays or referees with microphones to explain things, and so it's always tough. You just kind of go with what your eyeballs initially see, and maybe ask a few people questions in the booth. But we bring on our guy, Gabe Camarillo, who's actually, he's on assignment today, man. He's not at the board like usual. And so, Gabe, first of all, where are you at, man?
I can't really hear you, but I think you asked me where I'm at. And I am currently about to hit the 101 north to San Jose to catch a flight to Boise.
Catching a flight to Boise. All right. Is that a little bit better? Can you hear me that better?
Yeah, now I hear you. Now I hear
all
you,
right.
Paul. Yep.
All right. Sounds good.
Yo,
catch it. All right, catching the flight to Boise. Big game tonight, Fresno State, Boise State. So make sure you follow Gabe. He's going to be there. So, Gabe, last night I tried to break down the game, as much as possible in the first segment, how it was a great game, a lot of action. Clovis East took the lead. Clovis West fought back. And Clovis East had a puncher's chance at the end. They thought they had an onside kick. Were you there down on the field, or what have you heard, or what was your interpretation for what happened on that non-onside kick recovery from Clovis East?
Well, we talked about it a little bit between ourselves, and I talked to Coach Nagel, and I got perspective on both sides about that play, and some Clovis West coaches didn't really get a good angle on it. I wasn't there to watch the play live, and I was listening to the radio broadcast, so initially, it was thought to be a false start by you in the broadcast booth, by maybe some people in the stands, but the explanation that we talked about afterward, Paul, was that it was actually an illegal onside kick, and my interpretation of the rule, which is a rule I wasn't privy to prior to last night, is it needs to bounce twice, or the first bounce cannot be too high, and the reason is for a safety reason, right?
Yeah.
You need to make sure that the players aren't rushing into each other at full speed and with the ball being in the air longer. Although it's interesting to me because how could that be a rule when it's just like 20, 30 yards from each other? If it's an onside kick, right, you're not running the full length of the field. You're just running that 30, 40 yards at each other. Not necessarily as dangerous as a kickoff return, but I do understand, though, the spirit of the rule. I do think that it's a rule that should be in place for most of the time, but Fakultas East, just a tough break. Like, they can't control how high they kick the onside kick, right? That's not something you really think about. But it's those kind of details that separate the winners and losers in the track. Unfortunately, someone had to lose last night, and it was unfortunate that this weird ending took away from what was otherwise a great game.
No, you're right. It was an absolute great game. So, yeah, I mean, just full of action, and Ryan Markarian was definitely on point last night. Marshall Sanders, he is at times a man among boys, man. When you're matched up one-on-one against Marshall Sanders, it's a no contest. And Clovis West, there's just a lot of questions about them coming in just because of the strength of schedule. So what do? Well, they beat Buchanan last week, and they beat a very good Clovis East team last night. You know, they still have Central, and Clovis North is looking really strong right now as well. And then obviously the final game against Clovis that culminating with all Clovis week, right? So what's your assessment of Clovis West, right? Obviously, you know, the doubters and the said strength of schedule isn't tough, but I think you just throw that out, this team's for real.
Yeah, they thrive off of being the underdog. I think that's the sentiment I've gotten over the first seven games. And so when they were the favorite for the first time, I mean, they were the favorite in those first five non-league games, right? But that's kind of why people were questionable, right? They didn't really face a tough non-league competition, as opposed to a Buchanan, which faced Liberty and Memorial, or Central, which faced Memorial and all those out-of-town teams. So, like, Clovis West had some of those question marks coming into track play. They answered all of them against Buchanan last week, and then they had to play as the number one team in the Valley. And I talked to some coaches, and they say it's fair to characterize them as maybe having a hangover in that first half. That's a fair assessment, because they were trailing 20-7 to Clovis East. Clovis East was coming in fired up to play the number one team in the Valley, and Clovis West was maybe still thinking about last week. I mean, this week in practice, they've had a tough time refocusing after all that happened at La Monica against Buchanan. So they finally refocused at halftime. They were able to get to what works best for Clovis West, and really that means getting the football to all those playmakers. I counted 3 touchdowns for Marshall Sanders and 2 touchdowns for Landon Wright. For those counting at home, that means 5 touchdown passes for Ryan Markarian last night. Fantastic performance for Markarian. And really, Clovis West is just blessed with talent and depth, because you also realize that they have a great backup quarterback in Tyler Patrick as well. Ryan Markarian's obviously earned that job, but I do think that they're stepped everywhere. You got 2 great quarterbacks, Markarian being a star. You have a bunch of good running backs led by Aiden Fortenberry, a bunch of good receivers. The defense is one of the best in the Valley. It's just the depth of Clovis West is really what is its strength, and that's why I think they are in the driver's seat to win the track.
Yeah, I have some official, unofficial stats. So Markarian did throw those 5 touchdowns, 19 of 25 passes, so only 6 incompletions for 324 yards. Landon Wright had 7 catches for 132 and 2 touchdowns. And you mentioned Sanders only had 4 catches, but 3 of them went for scores and 106 yards. Were you at a couple other games last night too, Gabe? I know you're interning at ABC, ABC 30, and so you're rotating around. What were some of the other games you were at?
Fresno Christian Sierra. Fresno Christian won that game over Sierra 56-27. And that's an exciting rivalry between those two schools, because I know Sierra plays 11-man during the non-league, and then they play in an 8-man league. So you go in thinking, well, Sierra maybe has more experience, right? Maybe they're coming in with a bit of an advantage. It didn't really matter for Fresno Christian. I think they can play 11-man football down the road. I know numbers is the biggest obstacle in that, but both these teams are some of the best 8-man football teams in the state, so I was able to watch that fantastic matchup the first quarter. And then I was also at Clovis North. See, Clovis North could be 2-0 right now, if not for Ty Miller's Hail Mary. And that's crazy to think about, because Clovis North is a good program. They have some explosive playmakers. And it's not just with McCain Matson. I know he gets a lot of the spotlight, and he deserves it because he's a future college football player. He's going to be playing on Saturdays. But I do think you got guys like Rasheed Monster who deserve a lot of credit, Vincent Cordova. Mario Cosmos come a long way from week one. So Clovis North, I think, is one of the most improved teams in the Central section. A lot of people saw them lose to Memorial 34-0 the first week of the season and wrote them off. If Clovis West wrote them off, then they might be in for a surprise. Next week's game between Clovis West and Clovis North might be closer than the experts think, because Clovis North is playing some really good football right now. And as you said in the last segment, they beat Clovis 38-35.
Yeah, and, you know, you're right. It's, that game is going to be at Veterans Memorial Stadium, talking about Clovis West and Clovis North. Clovis East, you know, doesn't get any easier as well. They're playing Central at home, and then Clovis is playing Buchanan. But, hey, I don't know how much you knew about that Buchanan game. I got a few stats, but I was following on Twitter a little bit and ended up being 49-41, so points aplenty in that game. And I think Buchanan was up by 3 touchdowns, and you can never count Central out, especially with a senior quarterback like Dayton Tafoya. Did you get any specs on that game?
Well, I do think Buchanan let their foot off the gas in that third and fourth quarter, mainly in the fourth quarter, because entering the third quarter, they were up 42-21. And I think that's okay if you're up 21 points, but you can't let that be a habit, right? I know Buchanan, that's been now like 2 fourth quarters in a row, the fourth quarter against Clovis West and now the fourth quarter against Central. But they've been outscored by a lot. So I do think that's something to work on for the postseason. I do think Buchanan, Memorial, and Clovis West are the three deepest teams in the Valley. No other team besides those three have the depth that those three have. And those three teams don't have a weakness. Try to name me a weakness with Buchanan, Memorial, and Clovis West, and I'll wait because I don't see one. So Buchanan is in that category with Memorial and West, but what they have to work on is just finishing games, right? They weren't able to finish against Clovis West. They had a great week of practice, which was probably one of their best weeks of practice they've had all season. And it showed in the first 3 quarters. They were up big against Central, a very good Central team. They just have to finish, avoid those penalties, and they're looking forward to that rematch against West in the playoffs.
We're talking with Gabe Camarillo. He does a phenomenal job Monday through Thursday. Hey, I get to talk about high school sports for 2 hours a week. This guy gets to talk about high school sports for 2 hours, 4 days a week. You can listen to him. Home field advantage, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5. The Cal Preps rankings, actually, they updated. You hit the old refresh button on the computer, and they updated. So Clovis West is 1, Buchanan is 2, San Joaquin Memorial, who blew out Madera, is 3, Liberty is now 4, St. Joseph from Santa Maria took a big jump. They are now number 5, Central Valley Christian is 6, they're base D3, so they can only go up to Division 2. Clovis East actually jumped up, even though they lost to Clovis West last night. They jumped to number 7 from number 9. There's Kingsburg at number 8. You know, big matchup against Central Valley Christian next week. Central dropped to 9. That is so weird to see Central number 9.
They can take care of it because they face Clovis East on Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Then Centennial is number 10. Then you got Lemoore. Then you got Clovis North, Clovis, Hanford at 14, and Bakersfield Christian at 15. And then there's Redwood sitting at 16. I thought they might jump up a little bit more. But let's give them a little bit of a preview from what you know between Central Valley Christian and Kingsburg. That's a game that has been earmarked for a long time when the schedule came out, especially now that CVC's got their running back dude eligible, Bryson Donaldson. Kingsburg's defense is excellent. I got to see them with my own eyes. Their offense with Trace Jackson. I think Trace had 3 more touchdowns yesterday, 179 yards. That kid's a dude. He was on the show last week. So, I mean, what can you say about that game, man? That game, hey, I expect Kingsburg Stadium there just to be absolutely packed next week.
Yeah, that's going to be the game of the year in the Tri-County Conference. And I think the winner gets the 1 seed in Division 2. The loser isn't necessarily guaranteed the 2 seed because Lemoore is playing some fantastic football. I would not be surprised to see Lemoore win out. I know they have last week of the season. They faced Hanford in what's going to be a hot matchup. But I think the winner gets 1 seed. Loser might not be the 2 seed, which puts even more emphasis on both these teams to win. Listen, I was worried about maybe one of these teams overlooking their opponents the last 2 weeks. Looking ahead of this game, not a problem with the caliber of coaching that they have. With Mason Hughes and David Wilson, of course, these teams are not going to overlook anybody. They took care of business, and now we got to talk about it all week, Paul. We got to talk about and the X factor, you mentioned it, is going to be, can Kingsburg stop Bryson Donaldson? Can they stop Bryson Donaldson, and can they contain Jaden Moore? I think those two guys, all respect to the Kingsburg side, those two guys are the most talented players on the field when those two schools play, because those two guys are headed for Saturday. Jaden Moore's headed to Oregon, and Bryson Donaldson, if he doesn't stop playing fantastically, I don't know if Fresno State has a shot at him because he's playing like a Power 5 running back right now. So I think if Kingsburg's able to limit those two Power 5 guys, Donaldson and Jaden Moore, they have a shot at winning at home.
Oh, that's going to be an exciting game. Can't wait for that matchup. Again, Gabe Camarillo on his way to Boise State and Fresno State. Awesome. Thanks, my friend. We'll talk to you soon. And make sure you follow him at Twitter at @GabeCamarillo_. Thanks, Gabe.
Thanks, Paul.
You bet. All right, coming up after the break, got some emperors in the house. Christian Bobbin-Reith, sophomore, only a sophomore, huh? Wow, he's a big kid for a sophomore. He's had an incredible couple games we're going to be getting into against Hanford and Tulare Western in the last couple weeks. Got Coach C.J. Lester in the house as well here at First String Sports. Going to get to know them a little bit more after the break, coming up on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
We are happy you found us here on 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. Yeah, talking with Gabe Camarillo about all these great high school football games that happened. I mean, we could do a full 3 to 4 hour show. There was talk a little bit this summer because we broadcast a game every week on 1430, a Friday Night Lights game. There was talk that we were going to, after games, go back to the studio and have like a call-in show. And I'm like, man, after games, I'm dog tired. How do you think the coach and the parents? Yeah. But I know, you know, that I wonder how a lot of you coaches do it, how you guys get sleep during the season, when you guys eat, your eating schedule. You know, that's just crazy stuff. So I got a couple Dinuba Emperors with us. And I say Dinuba Emperors because C.J. Lester is the head coach of Dinuba, and he's Dinuba through and through. Played there, alum of the school. And we got Christian Bobbin-Reith. So when I texted C.J. about their game against Hanford, their win against Hanford, and we were following that game. It was like 16-0, then 16-16. I don't know. Multiples of eight, man. Everything's like eight. He got the 30-30 tie game, and then won in overtime. And I'm like, CJ, how'd you guys do it? He's like, we believe, Paul. And then I said, who are some dudes? And he's like, man, I had a dude, Christian Bobbin-Reith, right? Stepped up, and he's here. He's here to talk about a couple of his incredible plays that he's done this year. He's our 1430 Student Athlete of the Week. First of all, CJ, what is it like after games, man? So let's say you got a 7 o'clock kickoff, right? Say a game's about 3 hours. You talk to your team. Maybe finally leave the locker room at, 11:15? Do you go hit some Taco Bell on the way home? You go find some McDonald's, or you go home and eat some pasta and maybe fall asleep by 2:30? I mean, what's that like?
Well, I mean, if it's a game, I mean, obviously when it's one of those tough ones, you lose, you're just kind of like, you got to go back to the drawing board. So you're just going to be watching film till like 3 a.m. and figuring out, like, what are we going to do next week to get better, you know? But if it's one of those games where – you know, you win, you know, and it's always a full team win. So as coaches, you know, we kind of get together and we usually have a place to eat at and hang out at someone's house and just kind of, you know, discuss what we got going good and then kind of discuss what we can do better. So they're always long nights regardless.
Regardless.
You know? Yeah, win or lose, you're going to be up all night.
And I know you're an early guy as well, man. You're like a 5 o'clock a.m. workout kind of guy too. You still try to keep that schedule, or is it kind of?
That's my routine still. You know, I wake up 4:30 and get in the gym by 5:30, and I got to do that. That's just something that's built into the routine. So that's kind of like what gets me going. If I wasn't doing that, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like I would have any energy throughout the day, man.
Oh, man. So speaking of energy, so last night you had a big win over Tulare Western. It was 49-7. Is that what it ended up being? Mm-hmm. You know, we'll bring in Christian in just a second. But, you know, talk about that win, who stepped up last night, and, you know, who played well for you guys.
I think, you know, defensively it's been kind of like our strong suit this year. Last year, offensively, we had, you know, one of the best offenses in the section. And, you know, it's kind of like this offseason we knew we were going to be senior heavy and we were going to have some newcomers that could make plays. And so we're like, you know, this is going to have to be our strong suit, so we're going to lean on this defense. And I think we've been leaning on that defense like the first, you know, 5 to 6 games. And last night, you know, I tell our guys before every game, you know, if we want to be known as one of the top defenses, you know, in the league or in the section, you gotta take care of guys like Tulare Western, and who I know is coached up really well, but they're without their quarterback. And you know, being without their quarterback, we felt like we could bring pressure and try new things that we haven't done all season. And defense stepped up, and then a lot of our offensive guys, you know, kind of bloomed last night. So I think we're hitting our stride at the right point of the season.
And really quick, so he's talking about that defense. So we're looking at the schedule here on Max Prep. So you know, had that game, that opener against Clovis East. And that's easily the most points you allowed all season. So
for
the
sure.
48-21, we know good Clovis East is, you know, they almost beat the number one team in the Central section. And then after that, you only allowed 6 points to Golden West, and then that great game against Kingsburg where they beat you 21-14, and they only gave up 6, 13, and then 30 to Hanford, man. And even though overtime they didn't score, I mean, Hanford can score, man. Those dudes can score. Then only 7 points last night to Tulare Western. But you got a guy to your left, right? Had a couple incredible plays. I want you to describe first the pick six that he had in the game against Hanford.
Okay.
And then I want it from his perspective after this. So explain, set up the situation, and then Christian will come in and give his perspective.
Okay, so, I mean, their quarterback is, you know, he was a fast quarterback, Caden Muir, and we didn't want him to just sit back there because he was sitting. We're in our dime defense at the time, and it was like third and long, so we're in our dime defense, and we weren't getting the pressure that we wanted. So I took, you know, one of our old plays, you know, at Woodlake, you know, I'm like, let me draw something up real quick and see if this hits, you know. So I wanted to get a little bit more pressure, and we have some tall D linemen who know how to get their hands up and or just playmakers, you know. And our guy, you know, Eddie Vega, we just told him, hey, both of you guys, our ends are going to hit the B gap, and my inside linebacker's going to wrap around, you know, kind of like a Texas stunt with our nose just pushing back the center. And so we got pressure in his face, and he tried to hit a guy down the middle, and, you know, Eddie tips the ball, you know, and he tips it right back to Christian, who's in the right position, and he gets it, and he goes 38 yards for a touchdown.
Was he untouched?
Yeah, he almost got caught at the end, so I'll say that.
All right, Christian. So coach calls that play that you just described, man, and you described it perfectly what you were trying to do. So that ball has popped up into the air.
Yeah.
Like, did you see it right away? You're like, oh, man, this is mine. Did you just go get it, or did it fall right into your hands?
It fell right into my hands. Like, Eddie Vega slapped it right into my hands. So.
And how far – were you, like, on the line of scrimmage, or were you back a little bit?
I was, like, back a little bit.
Okay, maybe 2 or 3 yards or something, mm-hmm. 5 yards. Mm-hmm. So it was, what, 38 yards, Coach? You
38
said about 38
yeah.
yards. Oh, man, when you caught that ball, I mean, what was going through your mind? You're just like, man, I got to go.
I had to score, yeah.
You had to score. And then when you crossed the finish line, like – did you turn around and see some of your teammates running towards you? What was it? What did you see from your perspective?
I saw Eddie Vega, Isaac Sandoval, and Julian right there next to me when I scored. So.
And that made it 30-30. That was with about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, we're still down two, so we had to get the 2-point conversion. But that was the one that we're just like, all right, we're in it.
And Christian, when you came to the sidelines, what were the coaching staff and some of the other guys telling you?
Good job, good play. They're all hype, so. Yeah.
And then you guys end up winning that game in overtime. You got that 2-point and won the game in overtime. Like, after the game, obviously it's a big game, man. You're playing at Hanford. Like, I mean, what after the game, what were you thinking? Was everyone just come up to you and congratulating you? Or were you like, man, I can't believe this happened to me. This is like feels like a dream.
Yeah, like everyone, like from the stands, were congratulating me for the pick. They told me I had a good game, the safety, everything.
And yeah, and you had a safety too. So, what point of the game did he have a safety?
So we were up 7-0, and we had, you know, tried to score, and they had the ball like at the 1 yard line, and we knew when they ran a certain formation, they wanted to run the ball, and I mean that game we're like, you know, when they get in that formation, we're going to bring pressure, and because we knew we'd get in the backfield, so and I knew he'd be back there, and. You know, we drew it up, and we knew we were gonna get it. You know, I was like, if they're 1 yard in and they're a gun offense,
yeah,
you know, so
yeah.
It's like they're already starting back. So, as soon as he gets the ball, we're gonna be in his face, and that's exactly what happened. K-Ball was back there, and it was, you know, it was a safety, and we're feeling good. You know, at 9-0.
All right, and so when you texted me too, and you said K Bob, right? Called Christian first, so Christian with the K. There's no H, no need for an H. Christian with the K. And then you said K Bob. I'm like, oh man, I gotta meet this guy, K Bob. So, K Bob. That's pretty much an automatic nickname, man. First name starts with a K, last name Bob and Reith. You got to go K Bob, right? When did they first start calling you that? Do you remember?
I think it was in the when we went to what was it called?
When you were in high school or when you were younger?
It was like middle school.
Like middle school. Did you go to Washington Junior High in Dinuba?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, all right. That's where I went, too. I'm an alum, too, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Washington Junior High, go T-Birds. So, K-Bob. K-Bob probably started in middle school.
Yeah.
All right. So, last night's game, this dude got another one?
Yeah, he got another one.
Come on. Come on. Tip ball or you catch it legitimately?
Yeah, it was legit. It was
all right,
legit.
It was legit. All right. So, Coach, you want to describe how he got a second interception for a touchdown?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's late in the game, and, you know, they're still throwing. I know they're trying to work on things, so we get it. And we have, you know, our twos in, and he's our middle linebacker that we throw in late. You know, he's a wheel. He plays wheel, but we throw him at middle linebacker from time to time because that's what he's going to be playing next year. And so, you know, it's just they know their reads. They know if they can count to three, you know, they're gonna make plays, you know. And he saw his three, you know, step up and block, and he knew that was his time to play free. And the backside guy's coming across the middle like on a slant, and it just the quarterback didn't see him because he's seeing it, you know, and he throws it right in his hands and he takes it back to the house, you know. So
how far was that one?
That one was around the, like, what, 30, 32, something like that. Yeah, it was about another 30-yarder.
So defense or so offense is out there. Look out for K-Bob, man. Quit throwing some of those passes when K-Bob's around. He's going to be right there and pick it off, especially when they're around the 20, 30-yard line.
Oh, yeah.
Line,
oh, yeah.
Taking it to the house.
Yeah.
All right. So when you got your second one, Christian, what was going through your mind on that one?
I just felt excited because I got another pick. So
when you were growing up, were you always a defensive guy? Or did you play a little bit of offense too?
I played both. Yeah, I was still a linebacker, but I played fullback too.
You played fullback. Mm-hmm. You ever had a pick six before these last 2 weeks? You ever had an interception return for a touchdown? Mm-hmm. Or is this your first two ever?
First two ever. Actually, one against Clovis North when I was a freshman.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. What is the biggest hit? Do you remember, like, the biggest hit that you've ever had in football?
Probably against Kingsbury this year.
Yeah? Do you remember that? Do you remember that play? How do you describe that play?
It was, like, they had the ball. It was, like, late in fourth quarter. And I got slant on the blitz. And then I hit the running back. So.
Was it Trace Jackson?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's power on power. What do you weigh right now? What's your height and weight?
5'10", 205.
205. What do you want to see him at next year? 230? You want to see this guy at 225?
I want to keep him like around 205, 215.
Keep him there?
Yeah,
all
205,
right.
215 some more muscle on him, and he's going to fly around.
Okay, all right. Sounds good. Another question for you, Christian. I know you play a little bit of offense as well, right? A little fullback action, mm-hmm. right? Those probably short yardage stuff.
Yeah.
What would you rather have in a game? 2 rushing touchdowns or 10 tackles and a big sack?
10 tackles and a big sack.
Why is that?
I just like hitting, so.
Is that true?
See,
you know that. All right. I know Coach Lester is he's a Niners guy through and through. I see his posts. I'm a Cowboys guy. I just kind of keep scrolling past it, right? Whatever. All right. Do you have a favorite NFL team?
Oh, it's the Niners.
You're a Niners guy too?
Yeah.
Come on, man. You know 49er fans are always good at football players.
All right. So is it a family thing, Christian? Like in the Niners, like maybe you didn't have a choice growing up? Do you have a choice? Or is it just handed to you? Huh? The Niners just handed to you. You're Niners. You gave you a jersey when you're in the crib still, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So CJ, what's your assessment of the Niners right now?
Man, they're up and down, man. They gotta figure it out, you know. I think defensively they're really great, you know. But if we have an offensive genius as our OC and our head coach, man, we better look like an offensive genius is coaching them, you know, because right now it's looking like, all right, Kyle. I mean, we got to see it because your defenses have been really good, you know, and we've had this offense. We put the money into the offense, so it's now. I mean, it's not Jimmy anymore, you know. We know what we're getting from Jimmy, you know. So now we got to see what you got, you know. It's play design now.
Well, see, you're a Niners fan, true and true, because you're calling these guys by their first names, like, you know, like, hey, Kyle, you know, the genius Kyle, you know, Jimmy this, Jimmy that. You're still attaching the word genius to Kyle?
I mean,
still attaching that.
I don't like right now. No, I can't.
Okay, okay,
I can't.
Okay.
But I mean that's what he's known for, right? Just being that offensive guru. Everyone talks about it. Everyone talks about him being that offensive guru. So it's like, it's not looking like that, you know. Like now we're trying to see, you know. Okay, well, Kyle, you have the pieces. The pieces are there, you know. And we saw what he's doing with Trey Lance, and it's just like that wasn't looking good either.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't looking good. So
well, when I saw him run the ball a couple times, I'm like, dude's going to get hurt.
Yeah, this is not college football.
Yeah, you can tell. You don't do that.
And he's not a big guy. You know, he wasn't a big guy. He's a tall guy, but he's not a big guy, you know. And for you to run inside the tackles like that, you got to be big.
Yeah.
You know, because even Josh Allen, he's a big guy, but he's not running in between the tackles like that, you know. Like, so it's like if you're going to go, you know, lose all these draft picks to get this guy, you know, you better protect him. Like, don't get him hurt in the second game, you know. Like, so. Yeah. He's got to do a better job, you know, offensively, and because that defense is going to have us in games, you know. So it's like, don't turn the ball over, have long drives, score points, you know. Yeah. So that's what it's going to have to be.
Talking with Dinuba head coach DJ Lester, who might have his own show in the future, talking about Niners football. Man, you got the voice, you got the knowledge. You're talking about nose guards, packing a little Texas twist, and all this stuff, and that's. That's next level stuff, at least for me. It
is. Yeah,
I'm just a flag football guy.
Right? Yeah.
My defensive flag football is like, you go get the guy with the ball.
Oh, for sure.
That's all you do. Yeah. Go get the guy with the ball. All right. Christian, who's your favorite NFL player?
Fred Warner.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You just like the way he hits, like the way he gets down and dirty.
Yeah, he's a leader, so.
All right. Who are they playing? Who the Niners play?
They got Carolina tomorrow.
Is it an early game?
It's a 1 o'clock game.
It's a 1 o'clock game. Okay. Is there an so he's your favorite player? So you like to play like him? Do you have any goals for after high school? Again, you're only a sophomore. You know, you got a bright future ahead of you, but do you have goals to maybe play in college? You have, you know, is there something you want to aspire to be?
Yeah, I want to play football in college.
What position would you like to stick with?
Linebacker still.
Linebacker. So CJ, you know, you've played college football. You know what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously Dinuba, when they get a D1 athlete, it's pretty rare.
For sure.
You know, you get some guys that go to other colleges, right? You think of Marcus McMarion, obviously, who's the prime example for, you know, just a superstar, and he's a great guy. He's been on a show before. He's amazing. So, you know, when you look at a guy like Christian, You think he's got what it takes to go to the next level?
Yeah, he's a kid. He works hard, you know. You know, there's times where, you know, he has that sophomore attitude, so he's still learning how to get that all the way through. But when you see guys who just have that it factor, you know, he's one of those kids, you know, like making the plays that he's making as a sophomore and just understanding the defense at a high level, because it's not an easy defense just to play in. You know, it's not a spot drop, you know, 4-3 or 3-4. Like, you have to read, you know. So just seeing him do that and seeing the way he's excelling with that, not just, you know, now, but like what he's done in the summer and things like that, I see him, you know, he can play inside linebacker at the next level, you know, especially at, you know, at the Division I level. Like, he's just got it.
Yeah.
He's got that it factor. He just understands football. He's a football player.
Good. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then looking ahead next week, you got a big one, don't you, Coach?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you watch some game film a little bit on Tulare Western. Now you're setting up against Lemoore. Looks like it's going to be home.
Yeah.
7:30 kickoff. And, you know, follow Lemoore a lot this year. I had their coach on and Preston Scott, their stud utility guy that does it all. But they got some dudes, right? They got a quarterback. They got a little bit of everything. What are you looking forward to most in that matchup against Lemoore next week?
I mean, we see it as we treat every week like it's championship week. You know, that's something that's on our game plan, championship week every week. Doesn't matter who we're playing. So we see this as another championship week. You know, we're going to prepare for them just like we prepare for everybody else, you know. Try to stop what they do well. You know, we're not going to try to stop everything, because obviously they're going to do things that, you know, they're going to make plays. That happens. That's football. But whatever they do well, we're going to just try to make them play left-handed.
How do they compare to Hanford? I'm not saying to compare necessarily as far as like style and scheme, but just like athlete wise, it seems like, you know, I know Hanford's got two dude running backs, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, how you know, they score a lot of points, right? Mm-hmm. Spread, right? So how would you compare those two teams?
I mean, both of them, I mean, they're in the spread, but they love to run the football.
Okay.
You know, they love to run the football. So our biggest thing is just, we're trying to make them one-dimensional. We're trying to make them throw it, you know, and their quarterback that they have, you know, he's a real springy guy. He can get out of there, you know. So it's like, we got to do our best to contain him and keep him in the pocket, but also do our best to, you know, stop the guys on the outside, you know. And our guys have done a good job of doing that, you know, taking away, you know, when we force them to pass, they do a good job on the pass outside of, you know, the Clovis East game.
Yeah.
But you know, these guys, I mean, they're a powerful team. You know, they run the ball just like we do, you know. But our main goal is to keep them off the field, have long, sustaining drives, and get three and outs, you know, and get them off the field as fast as possible.
Other quarterbacks thrown for 18 touchdowns. Ty Chambers, their running back, a little bit. Because they got a couple dudes they give the ball to. Mm-hmm. 13 total rushing touchdowns in their seven games. But, you know, how would you best describe, we only got about another minute here, home games at Dinuba? You know, we were on the show last year, we talked about the Green Mile and the motorcycle. So for everybody out there that doesn't know what a home game at Dinuba High looks like, how do you describe it best?
I mean, it's the closest things to like a Division I atmosphere, you know. I mean, obviously you're not going to have the 20,000 to 60,000, you know, fans, but for a small town that Dinuba is, like, the town just shuts down just to go to the football game, you know, and the year that they're having right now where it's been, you know, up and down, and then now we're like kind of we're going up. So now you're just going to see a lot more people out there and supporting and things like that. And when these guys get to walk the Green Mile and the Harleys are revving up, you know, I'm happy for them, you know, because our biggest thing is, you know, we don't know how many of our guys are going to play at the next level. So let's make the next level here. So it's one of those atmospheres where you're not going to forget it.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. And were they doing that when you played? When did this start after you?
So we started doing it a little bit, but we didn't have the actual Green Mile. They would actually bring the motorcycles on the field, and they're kind of like Kerman used to do. I don't know if you remember how Kerman used to do it, but we did it like that. But we don't have it like they have it now. So they have it a lot better than we did. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thank you guys. This was great to talk to you, and CJ, I always love running into you and our different venues of life. And you know, you're obviously down there in Dinuba, and I'm down there in the South Valley as well. So always great to talk to you. And yeah, I could always count on you texting me back pretty quick after games, man. So you're my guy, too. So, Christian, appreciate you coming on the show. Congratulations on your pick sixes, man. It's something that you soon won't forget. And I know you got a great team and a great ball club, great classmates and teammates as well. So thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, no problem.
All right, yeah, coming up after the break, Efren Gazar. Oh, can't wait to talk to Efren. Coming into First String Sports, talk about his career, his life, his incredible journey from walking on to Fresno State to becoming an all-WAC player. So make sure you guys stay tuned here on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. Come on down here to First String Sports. I'm in the Letterman's Jacket Room. I love this place. I absolutely love where my show is set up. It's a perfect place. Got a nice banner that says Central Valley Sports Report in a Letterman's Jacket Room. So I'm looking at Letterman's Jackets from Kingsburg, who's got that big football game against CVC next week. San Joaquin Memorial, who blasted Madera last night. Liberty Madera still undefeated as well. Look at that, their jacket. Clovis North, Clovis High. What I got behind me? There's Kerman. Speaking of Kerman, we're going to have coach or a former coach. Actually, he was the head coach of Kerman for a little bit. Efren Gazar is coming in. He's a little bit late. He texted me. I know he's busy. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because Efren is still coaching football. He's coaching the youth leagues there in Kerman. So he's in charge of lots of stuff, man. The guy's running around. I texted him like, I think it was about 3 weeks ago. Say, Efren, is there a Saturday that you can come on the show? Because I really want people to hear your story. You have an incredible story. He's like, yeah, hey, October 8th works. So I'm like, all right, let's book it. So I know he's running youth league stuff, so he's running a little bit late. But, you know, when you say the name Efren Gazar, just people just light up. I mean, he's called Mr. Kerman for a reason. Walked on to Fresno State, 1997, Coach Pat Hill's first year. I believe he was number 105 out of 105 as far as the depth chart goes. So for a kid to walk on the team, he actually took 3 years off. He didn't play football right out of high school. He tried to coach Jim Sweeney. Said, you know what, all our walk-ons are filled. Can't let you do it. So he didn't play football for 3 years. And then he got the itch. He's like, I'm going to give it a shot. And he'll readily admit, he was the smallest, the weakest, the shortest guy, had the least amount of chance of making the team, and he just balled out. He just impressed everybody. The coaching staff was impressed by his attitude and his work ethic. You know, he comes from a strong family. You know, a His parents came from Mexico in 1975, worked in the fields there in Kerman, and they were just really good role models for what hard work means. And so he took that attitude to the football field, impressed the coaches, made the team, had six interceptions as a walk-on, played 2 years at Fresno State, collected six, two of them went for touchdowns. So we'll be definitely talking about that. But then a year ago, October of last year, was diagnosed with ALS. It started with some numbness in his hands, and they thought it was carpal tunnel syndrome, had some surgeries, and then it led to the diagnosis a year ago. So he's in the battle for his life right now. So obviously, his story is incredible with the football, but he's also going through the fight of his life. There was a big, I think it was 6 weeks ago, there was a big fundraiser that I was able to go to where there was a cornhole tournament. there was a dinner. There's a silent auction. And just to see the outpouring of love for this man was just absolutely, absolutely amazing. You could just tell how beloved he was. I mean, there were, I don't know, an estimate. I'm going to say 500 to 600 people there. So 500 to 600 people there to honor Efren and to raise money for his fight against ALS. So, Efren, I'm kind of peeking out the door. He should be coming in here at any moment. So he was actually honored, too, for Fresno State in the first game of the year against Cal Poly September 1st. So it was really neat to see him there on the field with his family. And I saw him get a little emotional there on the field. And I know it was a big moment for him to walk down that ramp again, like he did when he played for Fresno State in the late 90s. But what a great testimony that he has, and excited to bring him on here in a few minutes. I want to go over, Gabe and I mentioned this a little bit, but I went over the rankings for high school football. I just got a text from Effin, almost there. So bring it on a couple moments. So again, go by the Cal Preps rankings, and if you guys are unfamiliar with how this works, so playoffs work based on a base division. So teams are placed in a base division, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, and we go by a website called Cal Preps, who ranks the teams according to their algorithms. They have a strength of schedule, so all those things matter in this. So Clovis West is 1, Buchanan is 2, Memorial 3, Liberty is 4, St. Joe's 5, Central Valley Christian 6, Clovis East 7, Kingsburg 8, Central 9, Centennial 10, Lemoore is playing Dinuba. We just had Coach C.J. Lester on the show. They are 11, Clovis North 12, Clovis 13, Hanford 14, Bakersfield Christian 15. And then some of the teams that we haven't talked about that much today. So Redwoods at 16, and then Garces, who might not even go to the playoffs because you got to win 3 games to go to the playoffs. They are 17. Mission Prep, they got a really good program there. They are 5-2. They are 18. And then there's Dinuba. So you're wondering about Dinuba. Where do they stand? Well, they play Lemoore, who's number 11, and Dinuba's at 19. They are based Division 2, so they'll stay in Division 2. Again, if they have a really bad year, which I don't see them ever having a bad year, they have the possibility of going down. So all schools, whatever base division they are in, they can go down one more level. Frontier, who had that big win against Garces, they are number 20. Washington Union, 21. There's Bullard at 22. They are 3-4. Paso Robles is 4-3, and they are 23. Santa Ynez is 24, and then Mission Oak is 5-2. A couple other schools of note. Well, there's Kerman. They are 4-3 on the season and number 28. Sanger, who's won 2 in a row, they are 3-4 on the season and 31. Edison of Fresno is 35, despite a 3-4 record. They are dangerous. They are based Division 1, but they will most likely play in Division 2. Liberty of Madera, those guys keep winning. They are 7-0. They are number 37 ranked. Well, but they're Division 5, so they might go up to Division 4. But right now they are 37 overall. Sunnyside is 5-2. They're base Division 3. They are number 40. Scroll down here a little bit more. Carruthers, they are 5-2. They are number 49 overall. Fowler is 5-2 as well. They are base Division 5. They're 54 overall. Reedley is 5-2. They're based Division 4. That caught me by surprise. I thought they, after the year that they had last year, I thought that they would be a base Division 3. But they're Division 4. They are sitting at 5-2. And then Strathmore. We know about Strathmore, right? Jeremy Blackwell does an incredible job. He's a Fresno State alum as well. They are 6-1. They got a state championship to their pedigree. They are a Division V team, which they should be. I mean, Strathmore is one of our small schools in the central section. They should be Division V through and through. Kalinga's got a really good team. They are 4-3. They are also a base Division V. They are ranked 59 overall. Dos Palos is 3-4, 62 overall. Emmanuel, who's on a three-game winning streak. Look at the Eagles started off, man. Their numbers are low, but, led by Josh Henderson, their new coach, and his son, Will Henderson, is an excellent, excellent football player. So they've won three in a row. He plays linebacker and running back. And they have a game against CBC the last game of the year as well. McLean, Coach Andrew Pancotti, I love that guy. Had him on the show last year. Just an incredible guy, just full of energy. He's got the McLean Highlanders at 4-3 this season. They are 70th overall. Mendota is 3-4. Never count out those. Beto Mejia and the guys. They have that win against Strathmore. It's actually Strathmore's only loss. That was a 7-6 win. Woodlake, they're 4-3. They're a base Division V. Let's see here. Chowchilla, the home of Cameron Worrell, or the alum of Cameron Worrell, I should say. They are 4-3. And on down the line, all the way down, according to Cal Preps, there are 110 schools in the central section. All right, well, we're going to take a break. I think Efren's going to be here in a moment, but we might as well take a break here and bring on Efren coming back on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Sports Report. All right, Efren is here, and I am excited. Efren Gazar. What that means is we're going to have like 35 minutes straight, no commercial breaks. So just you and I talking about your life, talking about your days growing up in Kerman, your Fresno State. Can't wait to hear those great stories. So Kerman High, graduate 1993.
Walk 94. On,
94, okay. Football.
93.
Football 93, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's football 93, graduate 94, walk on to Fresno State, all whack, involved with coaching, running leagues. Still work in Kerman, right? You're still in education in Kerman. Had a big shocking news about a year ago, diagnosed with ALS. We're definitely going to be talking about that and letting people know where you're at with that and just the trials that you're going through and the strength that you've gotten from the community. But, first of all, thanks for coming, man. I know you had a little bit hitting every stoplight on red coming here and traffic. So, yeah, thanks for making your way here.
Thank you,
appreciate
Paul,
it.
For having me. And I appreciate the fact that you came to the fundraiser that you were talking about earlier in the segment, so thank you.
Absolutely. And then you were honored by Fresno State as well, which was a great moment. I'm like, Efren's being honored. I can't wait. So I saw you out there. So that was great. So I kind of want to start from the beginning, like growing up in Kerman. You have a large family. Were you born in Kerman? Were you lived in town? Or you live out in the country in the rural area?
Actually, we lived when we first got here. My parents came to California and ended up in Kerman. We had family there. My mother was pregnant with me 9 months, and the first year of my life, I grew up in a garage living with family members. And from there, working in the fields, and we ended up landing in and we call it the Terrace.
Okay.
Other people call it the projects. We always called it the Terrace. And a family of 10 living in a little three-bedroom apartment and just chipping away every day, working in the fields and following the crops. And, it was a fun yet struggling time for me, but it helped mold me into the person I am today.
Do you remember going to school for the first time? Did you grow up, was English your first language? You grew up speaking Spanish. Do you remember going to kindergarten?
Actually, I do. Yeah. And we would walk to school. We were a few blocks away from Kerman Floyd where I went to school, and Spanish was my first language, so I struggled in school, got held back in elementary school. Probably one of the best things that could have ever happened to me, being held back, because I wasn't ready. So I was fortunate enough to have my mother and father and my brothers and sisters that helped me along the way. Got a lot of trouble. But I think through sports is what really helped me.
And growing up in Kerman, and I teach in Traver, so most of our population is migrant farm workers, and so there's the mentality of grinding through life, of struggling, but it makes you stronger, especially when you have a support system, when you have parents that care and care about your education. You know, how important was that in development of who you are?
For me, honestly, it was, you know, I have an older sister that's about 18 months older. I have two younger twin brothers that are about 18 months younger than me. And when my parents were working in the fields, they actually would take me in a box, drag me along the fields, about 20, 30 vines ahead. I'd sit there and play with leaves is what my mom would tell me. And they'd pick the grapes, lay them down for raisins and move me along the way. And that's all I knew growing up. And as long as I can remember, placing the dirt clods on the trays to make sure the wind didn't blow it. And so I did that. And my father would take me up to Washington and we'd do the apples and cherries.
Yeah.
So basically followed the crop and come back, go to school and start all over again.
What, I mean, that was just your way of life where, yep. And your family was very important to you. Did you develop friendships along the way? Do you remember having some friends growing up that you really stuck to, and then maybe you had to leave them for a couple months and then come back and hang out with your friends?
Oh, absolutely. Had a lot of friends still to this day, even some of them that chose the wrong path, and unfortunate for them, but they're still my friends. And a lot of kids that I grew up with that through sports really connected me to them and taught me the value of perseverance and being there and making sure you're accountable. So I was very fortunate to have good coaches and good family members and friends along the way.
And good teachers.
I'm absolutely
sure you had some great teachers.
Absolutely.
Right. So yeah, as a teacher, like, you necessarily don't remember what teachers taught you. You remember how teachers made you feel.
Absolutely.
Right. They encouraged you or patted you on the back, said, you know what, you really got better. And you don't, like, I don't remember getting better at anything. Right. You just kind of, you go to school and you learn, but you just remember how teachers made you feel at the end of the day.
Absolutely. So in elementary school, I had a lot of teachers that made a connection with me, regardless of my background, regardless of my abilities. Again, I'm a second, you know, English was my second language, and each teacher, I can honestly tell you, made a connection with me. Through elementary school, I got in a lot of fights, did a lot of dumb things, and they still did not turn their back on me. And that's the important thing that teachers today need to understand that are in education, because I sit on the school board in Kerman, and I occasionally would say that in my board report, you know, make a connection with each kid. You know, I was that English learner that we have today in Kerman, and it help me become the person I am today.
Absolutely. Talking with Efren Gazar. So you mentioned how sports were important in your life. And, you know, they're a metaphor for life as well. And gives kids something to do. And, you know, and you mentioned you got in a lot of fights. So, you know, turn that into the game of football. When did you first start to play football, or when did you first start to love football?
My oldest brother was playing Pop Warner. So, you know, watching him and, you know, being a young kid in Kerman growing up, riding my bike or my skateboard and, you know, getting in trouble doing dumb things and
going to the corner market and spending your 35 cents on something.
Collecting cans to,
right.
You know, get money to go to the Kerman pool and get in. But it was the very first time I was going to attempt to it. A lot of people don't really know this. It was kind of late in the season. And I was that kid that got pulled aside, you know, first week of practice. All right. There's five or six of us. You guys are on the, you know, you got to work harder.
The B squad or
right.
Something, right?
No, you're not going to make the team, basically,
oh,
kind of deal.
Okay.
And, you know, the next week comes, you guys got to give everything you have. And I did. You know, I had nothing to do, never knew what football really was other than throwing a football in the backyard with my friends and doing that kind of stuff. So ended up making the team and wasn't the greatest player. You know, I was on the team. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the camaraderie. I enjoyed the impact that the coaches had on me. That he's Coach Ray Rocha. I'll never forget it.
Oh, wow.
And he followed our group of kids, myself, my class, all the way up into high school. So our freshman year, and we were 5-0, undefeated, unscored on. Our sophomore year, the first five games, unscored on. We beat Central, which was a big thing back then.
Yeah.
Central was a huge rivalry for us. And going into my junior year, that's when I really started to click and get things going and putting the work in. I just wish back then that I would have committed myself like I did at Fresno State in the weight room.
Yeah.
Because our weight room was literally a hallway.
Yeah.
And
with a couple, which is free, our, couple free weights, right? Just yep. Do some curls for the girls, yep. Right? And yep. Then maybe a push-up or
one
two.
One squat rack, two bench racks, and that was it. So so it was great to be a part of that and to learn that it's not – and I tell the kids this all the time, even kids that my coach now that got in trouble and are doing good in life, and it's not where you start, it's where you finish.
Absolutely.
And I say that all the time.
Amazing. So you didn't – so sophomore year, you were on JV, and then you got moved up to varsity?
For playoffs yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Okay, so junior year and senior year, you said it started to click, right? Football,
yeah.
You started to read a little bit better as far as, you know, the offense, because you're a defensive guy. But you also played a little bit of offense in high
running
school,
back.
Right?
Yeah.
Played a little running back. What did you enjoy more in high school?
To be honest, the offensive side. I did. So my junior year, I was the backup to one of our senior running backs, and he got hurt, and I got in against Central.
Okay.
Had an amazing run, broke, I don't know, 5 or 6 tackles and scored a touchdown. And from there on, I became the guy on the running back side. And I played linebacker all the way through until my junior year, and my defensive coordinator, Mike Oda, moved me to safety. It was the best move that could ever have happened.
Well, what was your height and weight your senior year?
Oh, God, I was 6'1", 155 pounds maybe.
Dripping wet.
Yep.
Dripping wet. What's the best way to describe Friday Night Lights in Kerman growing up? Again, you graduated in 94, played in your senior year in 93. But what's the best way to describe Kerman on Friday night?
It's small town. Everyone looks forward to a Friday night. Just everyone going to the games. I mean, there's times we played, Tranquility or Central. It was standing room only. People were lined up around the track. I mean, it was just an amazing thing to see and be a part of. The entire town, literally, it was, small town football.
Yeah.
And little Kerman, we packed the stands.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. So you graduate. From Kerman High, did you have any goals to play in college football? Did you have any looks? Did you have any ideas what you wanted to do after high school?
Actually, yes. So my very good friend, Tony Vias, who played at Montana State, went to Merced right out of high school, tried to get me to go there, and I chose, I think I'm done. I'm not going to go. There was about 7 of us that, excluding me, that went to Merced to play football, junior college, and it was probably one of the biggest numbers to ever come out of Kerman High School that had that many kids go on and play and continue. And today, too many kids just give it up and don't want to, put the work in. But, after high school, our senior year, we took an unofficial trip to San Diego State, myself and Tony Vias and Freddie Badillo, who was a coach at the time, good friend of mine still to this day, took us there. Next year, coach gets fired. So we're basically going to be walk-ons. We qualify for financial aid, so there's no scholarship or anything tied to it. I did get an offer to play at St. Mary's, and I was literally going to pull the trigger and go. My wife was girlfriend at the time, was going to play softball at a community college up there in Moraga. And just, we're sitting there one day, and I told her, I said, babe, I really don't want to do this. I think I'm done.
Yeah.
She goes, God, me too.
Thank
you. She goes, oh, thank you. I said, all right, so we're good. So I decided to try to walk on at State, and at the time, squad was full. Sweeney was there, and I get it. I mean, it was, I walked in with my tapes. He's like, I'm sorry, Ephraim, we can't, we're full. I said, all right, well, I appreciate it. So I said, I'm done. Just went to school and grinded it out. Never worked out, didn't do anything. Played pickup basketball at Georgia Browns, and that was pretty much it until – Coach Hill came in.
So there was a 3-year gap, right? So mm-hmm. Then 1997 hits, and a guy by the name of Pat Hill becomes the head coach at Fresno State. You said you're not working out, not really. Maybe you regret it a little bit, like your decision not to play football. So 97 rolls around, and what's going through your mind?
Well, it was my brother's fault, which is a good thing. He's the one that called me and said, hey, here's your chance. New coach, you got nothing to lose. Everything to gain. I said, all right. So I walked in, took my tapes. He looked at me. He goes, we start on this date, show up at this time. And I was like, that's it.
Did he say how old are you?
No.
Like, are
no.
you like, oh, I graduated.
He did ask if I'm eligible, and I said, absolutely, coach. You know, I graduated top 10 in my class in high school and at Fresno State. You know, I was going into wanting to be a physician assistant, and so I was that jerk that set the curve in all my
way to
courses.
Go. Yeah, everybody hated you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was just it was my jaw just dropped when he told me that. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's easy, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, driving in Kerman in the dead of winter in the fog, and I'd get up 5 o'clock in the morning to make sure I wasn't late to morning workouts during the winter time when they all started. So, showed up, my cleats, never looked back.
Did you know anybody that was on the team at that time? Or
no.
Are you just like, hey, who's that? Or people like, who's that? Scrawny Kerman, what the heck's a Kerman, right? Yeah. What's he doing here, right?
Where's Kerman from? Where the heck is he from? Yeah, it was weird. The funny story is the first 2 days of practice, you know, I showed up in my Kerman shorts and my Kerman shirt and my cleats. Pat Hill walks up and we're doing our stretches and he goes, Efren, what's wrong with this picture? And I go, what do you mean, coach? He goes, look around. I'm looking around. I don't know. Because why aren't you wearing the same thing everybody else is? You know, I don't know, coach. You told me to show up at this time, so I showed up. So he gets the trainer, the equipment guy over there, and he goes, make sure he gets a locker, gets all the stuff. So after practice, walk in, get a locker, get two pairs of cleats, you know, the shirt, the shorts, the sweats, I mean, the whole workup. And he's explaining to me, when you're done at practice, you throw this in the mesh bag, and you take that bag, and you throw it in here, and we'll wash it for you. And I go, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I go, so do I have to come to you to pick it up? He goes, no, it'll be in your locker, washed, ready to go for next day's practice. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be great. I was like, wow. So about the third or fourth day, I was matching everybody else and was out there and grinding, threw up every day after practice because I was pushing myself to the limit. And it was a great winter, I'll put it that way.
So then – come back, right? And then real tryout start. Is there a depth chart? Are you what does that look like? The walk-ons have a separate sheet, or you got your scholarship guys here and then walk-ons, what's that look like?
You're basically at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
And you know, doing the workouts in the weight room, you know, I really didn't have a partner because I was literally the weakest guy on the team. I mean, there was a DB there, I'll never forget it, Doc Moy, little guy, probably 5'6", 5'7", if that. I mean, he's benching 275 pounds. I'm there barely doing 145. I was like, oh my gosh. But you know, it pushed me to try to get to that point, so I was able to work hard and continue to do that. And you know, just whenever I got a chance to get a rep, which wasn't very often, if that, and you know, when I got in there, I made sure I was in the right place, making sure I was making the right decisions, the right checks, even if it was two reps, three reps. I think that was probably the limit, honestly.
Yeah.
And then doing the individual workouts to try to make a special team squad, and you know, just waited my turn.
Yeah.
And they saw something in me, and I was literally the last guy to make the team, and ended up making kickoff, and that's where it all started right there.
Talking with Efren Gazar, Kerman grad, talking about his days walking on at Fresno State. So what was that moment? Did a coach come up to you and say, hey, Efren, got good news, you're on the team, right? Or was there a list? Or when you found out that you had made the team and all that hard work that you put in, and remember when you showed up in your Kerman gear, what was going through your mind? What were your feelings?
To see the list and to see that I made the squad was one thing. And to make the travel squad, that's a different thing. And the only way I was going to do that is if I got onto a special team. And I made it on kickoff, which was great. Played a little kick, punt return and some punt block, but kickoff was the ticket for me.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, and I was like, yes. And I knew we were going to Hawaii, so never been on a plane in my life until I played at Fresno State. It wasn't the Hawaii trip. It was a different trip, but it was just great to see my name on the depth chart of kickoff.
Where'd you line up on kickoffs?
I was number 7, the number 7 guy.
You remember your first Division I hit?
Absolutely. I'll never forget it. Portland State, first opening kickoff for Pat Hill's career, and I made the first tackle.
You did?
Yep, the very first one.
Wow.
Sprinted down, tackled the guy. scored. Next kickoff, I did the exact same thing. Next kickoff, the exact same thing. So
3 for 3?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. At what point did you feel like you earned the respect of not only coaching staff but your teammates as well? Was there a certain moment when you felt like, hey, that kid can play ball?
Yeah, when I was on the roster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had a bio. You know, it just that was it. All the hard work paid off. Granted, I struggled a lot, but it paid off.
Well,
definitely
paid off. It did, right? And it's obviously I know your story well. I'm a few years older than you, but I followed your career. Remember you at Kerman, and then playing at Fresno State. Oh yeah, I kind of remember that Kerman kid. What, he's on Fresno State now as a walk on. So not only did you make the team and make those tackles on the special team, but 6 interceptions. Your first year at Fresno State, 6 interceptions, 2 for touchdowns as a walk-on, right? I mean, those two interception returns for touchdowns, those two pick sixes, what, UNLV and Tulsa? They got those right?
San Diego State.
San Diego State and UNLV.
At home.
Both were at home.
Mm-hmm.
But 6 interceptions. What, were you just able to, you know, be in the right place at the right time based on your positioning and your awareness and your athleticism? How do you describe that?
You just have to have a knack for being in the right place, but at the same time, you have to understand the scheme, formations, tendencies. And I listened to Coach Coyle, who's the D coordinator now today. He was the D coordinator then. Just putting yourself in the position to make sure you make the right play. And I studied film. I mean, I watched film like there was no other. I mean, I was literally a coach on the field, just understanding positions, how receivers are standing, what their tendencies were. I mean, we pretty much knew when they were going to pass.
Yeah.
We knew when they were going to run. And it was just had a nose for the ball is what coaches would say. I had a nose for the ball. And it started at, you know, before we even started the season, it happened, running the scout team. I was on the scout D. You know, David Carr was the probably the best quarterback we ever faced, and he wasn't even the starter. It was Billy Bolick. But, you know, being out there and picking off David Carr at practice on a regular basis.
That's you're like, hey, this guy's supposed to be good. Come on.
So we had our, you know, the annual big spring game, and, you know, I got probably 5 or 6 reps and picked off Billy Bolick. I mean, it was putting myself in the position to make good plays, and that's what I did, and it paid off for me. It did. It really did. And, you know, being there and seeing a lot of the stats that were, you know, online, I'm up there and I'm looking and my name's there and Charles Woodson's name's there. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
I believe, were you 11th in the nation maybe in interceptions that year? Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
I think I'm 11th.
Which is kind of false because they claimed I started all 11 games, which I didn't.
Yeah.
It was really 7 games that I started. So
in 7 games,
seven games started.
Which play at Fresno State is the most memorable for you?
The very first pick, which is a pick 6 at home. My entire family was there. They got to see it. It was just didn't expect to even get in the game. I was playing kickoff. I knew that. They came to watch me, and my number got called, like, get in there. And it was really just, you're going to play this series, and got in and picked it off, ran it back for a touchdown. And then next game, you know, I wasn't the starter. It was just, you know, because someone got hurt, Corey Hall, and other injuries that happened, my number was called. So it was a great
feeling. But you were ready. The preparation that you're doing, you were absolutely no hesitation. What they say, Gazar, 38, you're going out there now, right?
Yep.
No time to think about it.
Nothing. I mean, we were playing at Oregon, and I was literally the last guy on the depth chart. And guy gets hurt. Coach calls me on the phone. I'm on the sideline. Coach wants to talk to you. Effing, you're going in. All right, let's go.
Yeah.
Went in, and at Oregon, we lost in double overtime to them then, but went in and played a few series, and just from there, just kind of trickled into the maybe Efren can do this, and they believed in me and gave me the shot.
Talking with Efren Gazar, and I know Pat Hill, right, and speaks very highly of you, and I know he's instrumental in your life. So what did the coaching staff back then, including Coach Hill, their belief in you and their trust in you, right? I mean, what did that coaching staff and Coach Hill mean to you?
The world. You know, they and Coach Hill will tell you this, they had to make a decision on who they're going to keep and who they're going to cut. And I was one of those guys that was, you know, a topic of discussion. And Coach Baxter and Coach J.D. Williams, who's still there now, he was a GA at the time, and they, you know, they basically vouched for me and said, I think this guy can do it. And so I owe a lot to Coach Hill and Coach Green, who's not there anymore, but Coach J.D. Williams, Coach Baxter, Coach Brown at the time was a defensive linebacker coach. They really made a connection with me, which I appreciated. And they believed in me, and that's basically where it's at. I mean, I was very fortunate. Tedford was there the first year, and then he left. But, you know, Jethro Williams, still the same guy. And they're all there. And
when he hugs you, what happens?
Oh, it's a great feeling. it's a bear hugging you.
It is a bear hug, man.
You know, and Timmy was a scrawny little freshman, I think, at the time, and he turned out to be an amazing linebacker, and now coaching and is back.
Yeah.
So
it's
just great to see all the familiar faces that that I knew, that believed in me.
And you got to go back September 1st, right?
Yes.
And you were honored before the Cal Poly game, first game of the season. You were diagnosed with ALS. We're going to get to in just a second. But what did that mean for you to go back to Bulldog Stadium and see some of those old coaches? And I'm sure you looked up the stands and probably saw some familiar faces. And then your family with the number 38 shirts. It's just amazing. So how do you quantify, you know, that feeling that night?
You know what? To be able to walk down that ramp with my son, my two daughters, and my wife and my father, it was the greatest feeling to do it one more time. That was just the kind of the icing on the cake for my Fresno State career, to have them be a part of that.
You have a favorite spot on that field?
The end zone.
I'm thinking, yeah, right? Like, like when you scored that, that first pick six that you had, was it on the right? Was it the right side of the field going? Was it on the left?
Left, yeah.
And where do you juked a couple guys and ran it in?
Yep.
Okay.
Right kind of towards the band section, right in that area.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so you mentioned you're married with your high school sweetheart. Is that a good way to say it? You mentioned that, you know, you guys went to high school together and your three kids. And then, describe, the start of, the beginning of when, you started to have some physical issues and before your main diagnosis with ALS. So what, were you having some symptoms with your hands and, what was that like?
It all started with my neck. So I suffered from degenerative disc disease. So I've had two lower back surgeries, no hardware, and started having issues in my neck that was affecting my shoulders and my hands. So, went through all the testing and figured out I had an MRI of my neck, and they said, Efren, you have the exact same thing going on in your neck that's in your lower back. And I was like, oh, man, here we go.
Yeah.
So, I battled through a lot of the discomfort, the pain, and finally got to the point where my neurologist said, Efren, we got to fuse your neck. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to do that. He goes, well, if you want to improve the symptoms that you're experiencing in your neck, the pain and your shoulders and arms, we need to do this. And I said, all right, let's do it. So,
well, what year is this?
Oh, this was probably about 4 years ago.
Okay.
4 years ago. And so they did that, fused my neck, worked. It was a successful surgery. All my follow-ups looked really good and promising. Everything fused right. There were no issues. I started to have the numbness and tingling in both hands, and they did all the EMG tests, electrical tests, all that stuff. You have carpal tunnel, so you surgery. I said, well, let's do it. What else? Well, ulnar nerve release, let's do it. So they did it on both hands. The left one didn't help. It kept the numbness and tingling in these two fingers. My pinky and my ring finger on the left side wouldn't go away. And the doctor said, well, we can go back in and do a ulnar nerve revision surgery where they take it, basically they call it the funny bone, they move that nerve so you don't have an impingement in your elbow. So I ended up doing that a year after all this was done on my left side. And just, 6 months go by, and I knew something was just not right. And I'm telling my primary doctor, so Efren, what do you think? I said, well, this numbness is not going away. So she refers me to a neurologist here in Fresno. I go and see him. didn't tell my family, my wife, anybody, basically that, you know, this is what I'm experiencing. I know something's not right. And he did the test. He said, Efren, I can't confirm you have anything wrong other than, you know, the issues you've had with the surgeries that happened. I said, okay. He goes, tell you what, let's come back in 2 months, and then we'll reevaluate. Well, when that 2 months came, and then I showed him my hand, he goes, we're done. Where do you want to go, Stanford or UCSF? I said, Stanford. And that's when he made the referral. Went to Stanford, and actually it'd be a year, October 29th, this month, when I first got diagnosed. So spent about 6-7 hours there at Stanford. Extensive testing, I mean, blood work, urine, I mean, you name it, had everything done. And after the 6-7 hours that I was there, he comes out, sits down right in front of me and tells me that, I'm sorry I have to tell you this. And I'm like, what? Do I have MS? Because that's what I wanted. I would take MS over ALS any day. He goes, no, I'm sorry, you have motor neuron disease. And I said, do you have any questions? I said, nope, I just want to go home. And that was it. I went home.
Yeah. So it was that same day as you were doing tests, or was it the next day? So that, 6 to 7 hours, it was that same
day. Yeah. Yeah, so his team of doctors would then go and interpret all the studies he did, the strength test, balance test, the symptoms. You know, I occasionally bite my tongue. I slur my speech a little bit, particularly in Spanish is where I struggle the most. But in English, too, when I just certain words I can't enunciate the right way. So putting all that together, that's how he came up with the diagnosis, along with the studies that he conducted on me.
So that was October 29th of last year. And then when you finally had to sit down with your kids and your family and your parents and close ones, you know, what was that like? And, you know, I'm sure there were lots of tears and lots of hugs.
Yep. The ride home was a very long one. Got stuck in traffic on the Pacheco Pass there. And my wife kept blowing me up. Tell me. I said, babe, I'll tell you when I get home. She kept texting me, and then she'd call me. I said, no, I'll tell you. She finally said, Efren, you need to tell me. I said, fine. I got diagnosed with motor neuron disease. What does that mean? I said, it's a disease. I don't know yet. They're going to do a lot more testing to figure out which one I have. Okay, see you when you get home. She hangs up. Of course, she Googles it.
Yeah, worst thing you can do.
The worst thing, and calls me back. She is bawling. I'm bawling on the phone. I said, babe, I'll be fine. Just wait till I get home. My family's blowing me up. How did the appointment go? They didn't know what I was going for. They just knew I was going for a follow-up there. And finally, just, you know, generic text to all my brothers and sisters and, you know, my in-laws and my aunts and uncles, and just, this is what happened. Don't call me. I don't want to talk about it. I just want to be left alone. Send it to my employers as well, my coworkers. Basically just left it at that, and they gave me my space and got home and broke the news to my wife officially in person, and then my kids.
And so the treatments, I know you have some infusions and different things like that. So how many infusions have you had? Is it a weekly thing now? It's, you know, has it been a year of infusions?
Actually, it's only been about 6 months.
Okay.
So every the first series was 14 straight days. That's the initial startup. So for 14 days, I had the infusion done at home. And then after that, it was 14 days off and then 10 days on. So I get a 14-day break and then the 10-day, like I have COVID at home.
Yeah.
So it's just it's an exhausting process for my family, because everyone has to take turns. My daughter, my oldest daughter, my wife, my two sisters. We trained my other sisters and my niece just in case. So when the rep came from Radicava is what I'm on, sat down, kind of explained the whole process. This is what's going to take. This is what you have to do. And so my oldest daughter was the rock star in the whole process. That got the call when I was at my initial appointment. I'm like, no, you're starting today. I was like, oh my gosh. So yeah. I call her, and, you know, she was at the time playing basketball at City and living with the roommates here in Fresno. So it worked out. So she came in, got a crash course. She trained everybody else.
And the community outpour has been amazing. I know probably at times it's overwhelming, but people, you know, Efren, do love you and they support you. What can you say about your support system and the community that has rallied around you? I know it's probably hard. You're, you know, you're humble yet proud, right? That's what I, right? You, you know, sometimes it's hard to see people help you, and want to help and accept that. But what can you say about the community that's surrounded you?
It's overwhelming. I mean, we are truly blessed. You know, they wanted to start a GoFundMe account. I said, no, absolutely not. They wanted to do this. I said, no, absolutely not. And our superintendent and two of the teachers that work under my wife, who's the principal there at Goldenrod Elementary, reached out to them. We're going to do some Gazar Strong shirts as a fundraiser and some hats, you know, just something small. And my wife tells me that. I said, I told you no. She goes, Efren, we don't have a say. They're doing it whether you like it or not.
They don't need your approval.
They don't need your approval. It's happening. This is what's going to happen. And it was, I mean, you know, you walk around the town of Kerman, you see these Gazar Strong shirts everywhere. I mean, literally kids, teachers, parents. I mean, it just, it was very humbling to see that, the outpouring and the continued support that we're receiving. And it's just, I mean, what can I say other than we are very grateful that this is happening?
Absolutely. And, you know, you see the number 38 shirts. I saw, seen them at the Fresno State games as well. So when you lay in bed at night and it's just you and your thoughts and the pillow, you know, just what's going through your mind at the first and foremost?
A lot. there isn't a day that goes by that I don't think about it. Don't think about what the future lies for me and my wife and kids, but I take it and I set it and I'll say over and over one day at a time. You know, am I going to have one foot in the past, one in the future, and shit on the present? So that's the mentality I'm taking. And each day is a different struggle. There's good days and bad days. I'm having more good than bad, but those bad days do come, and I don't like it. I don't like the way it makes me feel, but I battle through it, you know.
Absolutely. So, Efren, this has been an amazing conversation. You are well loved and well respected up and down the valley. You know, from your humble beginnings, right, in Kerman, and growing up, and people investing in you, and you then turning. And I wish we had another hour to talk, but then I know how much you've invested in others. You talk about your coaching and your work in education as well, and you know, you were probably a knucklehead once growing up too, and you could speak truth and love into knuckleheads right now as well. And so I know that's a passion for you, but first of all, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you sharing your story, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Coming back, we're going to wrap everything up here on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Don't get to talk to you guys for another week. Hey, I'm on the broadcast next week, though. We are doing a big game, Bullard and San Joaquin Memorial, so make sure you tune in next Friday. Got a lot of thank yous. First of all, thank you to First String Sports. They are my day ones. They are awesome. They are a great sponsor. Love being here. Thanks to Gabe Camarillo. Thanks to Justice back at home base. Thanks to Dinuba head coach C.J. Lester, Christian Bobenreith, and of course, Efren Gazar. Oh, he's still sitting with me here. I mean, I just can't get enough of this guy. I love talking with him. Go back and listen to, if you missed any part of any show, especially that conversation I had with Efren, go back to the 1430 website. Make sure you go to Central Valley Sports Report and go to podcast, and you can listen to each and every show. But Efren, thank you very much for coming again. We had a great conversation with you. We wish you the best of luck. You're definitely in our prayers. So you guys have a good week, and we'll talk to you soon.